I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 63 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 Frank Capra movie, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, besides all the growling of the dog, are Caroline and Justin, the old movie time machine. Welcome back.
Hey, Rob, thank you for having us back again.
I it's always good to just, you know, to let things flow as they go. So we're good.
Thanks for having the dogs back again.
Thanks for enduring the dog.
No, the dogs are here besides you. Don't you made it sound like you guys are the dogs. No. Okay. So minute 63 begins with George looking around at the bridal suite and ends with Bert and Ernie beginning to serenade. So basically, We ended things yesterday with George still in shock, trying to figure out what the hell's going on. You know, what has Mary done this time? He took a quick look around the dilapidated house. And what he does here is he starts moving towards Mary in this minute. And he says to her something. And we don't really know what he says. You know, he just like moves his mouth. Maybe it's just in shock or in awe as to what is going on. Mm-hmm. Then we get a quick pan of the room and we get to see all of these various posters of some very exotic places, you know, winter in Florida, luxurious cruise on the South Seas, you know, and then we can see what one of the things I was talking about yesterday, which I thought was Mary, but now we can tell it's not. It's a poster of a girl on a surfboard wearing a Hawaiian lei. My assumption is it's not Mary. It could be. You never know.
You never know.
They could surprise us with these type of things. Yeah. Who knows?
My note at this point is vintage travel posters, ! And then I realized I had to cross out the word vintage. They're just travel posters at this point. Like, we would still see these. These are still sold all over the place.
Yes.
And are used as decorations for contemporary homes. So, but Back then, very exciting windows into
back then they weren't vintage either.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This was just travel posters.
That's right. You know, it's like the famous joke on Friends, which I'm assuming has been used many times, you know, where he was talking about what did you eat when you were in China? And he goes, we ate Chinese food. And he goes, what there? They just called it food. You know, right.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Chandler Bing. We'll always love him. What can I say?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so George starts walking towards Mary, and we get a view of all of these different things on the table. We see he's got champagne on ice, what looks like a teapot, and
yes. You know, I have thought going to be having table set up. Here's my question. So I'm looking at I did a freeze frame on this just to check it out. I'm always intrigued by how people are eating back in the day. I like to see what's on the menu.
We talk a lot of living rooms on our show.
Oh, okay, yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that. It makes sense.
Oh no, we will obsess. So this was a fixation for me, this table. I mean, very beautifully set table. We got a nice wedding cake in the middle. We have the champagne, as you noted. My biggest question though was, did you all see how many spoons are laid out?
Yes, I was going to mention that.
At least three spoons, right? I mean, they how each many have, liquid there's a, forces there's are one on the
fork.
Menu?
That's right. There's one fork, one knife, and three spoons. So I guess
three spoons.
I guess
I think that there would be a tea or a coffee spoon. I think that there would be a dessert spoon and perhaps a soup spoon.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I just they're having chicken though. You know, like how many spoonfuls of chicken does a person need?
Yeah. Okay, now I just want to read. Curious. I know you're 100% right. I want to read from the script as how it describes this table. Okay, and the room itself. Okay, because the house is carpetless, empty. The rain and wind cause funny noises upstairs. A huge fire is burning in the fireplace. Near the fireplace, a collection of packing boxes are heaped together in the shape of a small table and covered with a checkered oilcloth. I never thought about the fact that this is actually not a real table. That's really weird.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It is
that set, makes sense.
That's right. It is set for two. A bucket with ice and a champagne bottle sitting on the table, as well as a bowl of caviar.
Oh, okay.
Oh, are any of the spoons on the table
caviar
spoons? Metal, yeah, like, but made of abalone.
I don't know. Oh, that's hard.
Is
to
that
tell.
A thing? What is that, Carolyn? Like, that, what? Why?
It's like the inside of oyster shell.
Okay.
Because you would not want to ruin the taste of the caviar with a metallic spoon.
Okay.
It actually is preferable to use, like, if you don't have, like, a caviar spoon, to get, like, a plastic spoon.
I see. I'm pretty old school. I use my hands. I just scoop it, hand style. or
pour it in the mouth.
Yeah, some Tostitos. That's fine.
Yeah.
But that makes sense. Abalone, I'll try that next time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two small chickens are impaled on a spit over the fire. A phonograph is playing on a box, and a string from the phonograph is turning the chickens on the spit. The phonograph is playing Song of the Islands. Mary is standing near the fireplace, looking as pretty as any bride ever looked. She is smiling at George, who has been slowly taking in the whole setup. Through a door, he sees the end of a cheap bed, over the back of which is a pair of pajamas and a nightie. Ernie exits and closes the door. So
I have chicken questions, you guys.
Okay.
I just know, like, the chickens look delicious, and I want to try them. But I just have concerns, foodborne illness, salmonella, because I think, as we all know, you know, the inside of your chicken must be cooked to 165 degrees Fahrenheit, and that will kill off all foodborne illnesses. I just don't want them to be sick. This is their time.
And I don't think these chickens are that big. I think they are. What year did this movie come out?
1946.
Six. Yeah. Right. Okay. These are 1946 chickens, or that look potentially like Cornish hens.
Yes.
Because they are probably not pumped full of, you know,
growth hormones
yeah, and right. things like chickens are today, where it's like massive chicken breasts. So I'm thinking that not only with the rotation of the phonograph powered cooking spit,
which is quite ingenious.
But because they're not super big, thick growth hormone injected chickens, 21st century chickens, that perhaps that concern for, like, that concern
this would be a bit safer, you think?
Yeah, I feel like the internal temperature would be able to more easily reach an appropriate salmonella killing
temperature. Okay. I just worry about them. I want them to be healthy because I like these people.
You've seen a lot of movies, people, you know, eating food off of a spit, you know.
Yeah.
This isn't, obviously they usually don't use a phonograph for it. You know, that's
right.
But,
which,
you know,
and the phonograph system, I just question the efficiency. Like, I think it's a really nice Rube Goldbergian sort of approach to the rotisserie mechanism. But at a certain point, that record runs out, and then does the thing keep spinning? And then what if you want to flip the record or start the record over? You know, do you have to move the string? It just seems like a lot of maintenance. Now, I say that this is a dilapidated house with no electricity. So you take what you can get, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Again, she has spent a lot of time. I mean, she has no money left because she gave away the $2,000 they had. But, you know, she spent a lot of time getting this, putting this all together. So you got to give her credit for that.
Full points. Absolutely. Full bonus points. She has done a nice thing here for them.
That's right. So you mentioned before that you can see that there's the wedding cake, you know, like the top of it.
Yes.
So what is, do either of you know the official term for the figurines that you put on a wedding cake?
I do not. I thought
they were toppers.
That's right. They're toppers. That's the word.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
They are all wedding cake toppers. Okay, which is a small model that sits on top of a wedding cake. Normally a representation of the couple in formal wedding attire. Okay, when do you think it became popular to start using these, or
I was just going to ask.
when did they start using them? Because obviously in 1946, they assumed that they had them in the mid 1930s.
Right. I could see this going back even further. I could see this being a 19th century thing. I could see it being a middle age thing, like the medieval period or something like that. I really don't know.
I mean, I would think so the plastic figurines that we think of as like the traditional ones, or are they made of sugar? Like, is it candy that they can then eat? So, yeah, I mean,
Well,
like,
it doesn't look like the ones that they have here are edible. It doesn't look that way. I mean, there's no way of knowing for sure. It
But
does look like it's just a I mean, you even can see that there's a veil on the bride. These are very
Plasticky.
well, now it, no, now they're just like they look in some ways just like toys that are put there, not necessarily, a wedding case quake topper. I mean, obviously, nowadays they're mostly made of plastic.
Yeah, I could see this being a thing where maybe somebody carves them out of wood at some point in earlier times, or as some part of the gift or something like that. But I really don't know.
So I mean, as you said, it goes back really, really far. But they only became popular and dominant in the U.S. To put on wedding cakes in the 50s. And it basically was a statement showing represented togetherness.
Of course, yes.
So if it became popular in the 50s, is that because of this film?
That would be a very good question. I don't know the answer. I mean, it didn't say it became popular because people saw it as they quickly panned across the table in It's a Wonderful Life.
Interesting though, very interesting.
Well, I wonder if this is the beginnings of the industrial wedding complex of the United States of America, where culturally, if you want to
Obviously.
get married, you must spend tens of thousands of dollars to do it. So one more item for the bride and groom to invest in, I guess, is it would be a topper for their cake. I really don't know, though.
It could be. I mean, I'm not. The question also is, and we don't know the answer to this, is this their entire wedding cake, or is this just a top tier? Like, we didn't see the wedding
Yeah, I had
itself.
that question. Right. And I kind of, part of me feels like this might just be the cake, considering their circumstances financially, but
That's right. It could be that she just baked another
Yeah,
cake today. It might not be
it
them
could
because we
be.
don't know. We don't know if they had a reception. We saw them come out. I'm assuming the church and everyone throwing rice at them. We didn't see them go anywhere besides trying to get to, the train station.
Yeah, they were already in their traveling clothes, not in their bridal clothes.
Correct.
Right.
So maybe
That's
that could
right.
be that it could be that that was the end of the reception that we don't know. But again, it is possible that she just went and made another cake, over the course of the day.
Well, it does look delicious, I will say that. And one of the things that we again fixate on during our show when we're checking out people's table settings and living rooms and counting ashtrays and whatnot is this food, is it being eaten? This is a pet peeve of mine where people will have scenes and order drinks and the drinks will arrive and then the scene ends and they leave and the drinks just sitting there, such a waste. So do we think that they ate these chickens and actually had this cake, or were they just smooching all night long?
I think they smooched and then they had chicken and cake.
I think they had
Sure.
cold chicken the following morning.
Oh,
All
okay.
of these are plausible.
That's
That's
a great
right.
way to get rid of the foodborne illness I'm so concerned of, is just leave those things spinning all night long until the fire dies
Well,
down.
no, but
You get a
you've pointed
nice
out that there's a
breakfast
problem with
treat.
that. You've pointed out that they're going to have to keep resetting
Flip
the
that record,
record. So that'll probably
So
get in the way.
ultimately,
That
once.
would probably get in the way of any evening activities if they have to keep getting up to go change the record.
That would be
So,
inconvenient.
yeah, they'd have to try and think of some other plausible way to keep the chicken cooking throughout the night.
If anybody can do it, though, it's Donna Reed in this movie, right? She would figure out a way. She seems very capable.
That's true. Did you notice what, how the contraption was set up? with the chicken. Mm-hmm. You can see like a spool of thread.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was like a piece of string that was moving and then rotating the yeah. actual spit. Yeah, mm-hmm.
correct. But the string is attached actually it looks like a rope. Yeah, it's like a little rope mm-hmm. that's attached to a spool of thread. Now, I don't know how that spool of thread is okay. staying on the, you know, the little bud that juts out of the record player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember having records as a kid, you know, it's a little bit of a bud there that holds it on. You know, it's not yes. something but hey, it worked.
The whole system seems kind of borderline, but yes, like you say, it is working. So we'll stick with it for now.
That's right.
And then assume, you know, that they will get that place yeah. wired up at some point. I'm not familiar enough with record player technology to know if I know in the 60s they had record players that were portable that you would put in your car. But at this point in the 30s, how does a record player work? What fuels a record player? Is it, I mean, electricity is still kind of entering society at this point.
Well, forget about that. They don't have electricity in this house.
Well, right. So I'm just wondering how does this mechanism work? How are they getting this? Island sound.
I thought that, you know, record players are something that you can, that you had like a crank that you can.
That's true.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
You know,
okay.
Which again would make it inconvenient if you keep having to keep changing it. You know, if you keep having to get up and crank it.
You know,
right. That's right.
But then you lose that ethereal music, and I'm fine with it. This is
yeah.
good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. It's great. Mm-hmm. And then Mary says, "Welcome home, Mr. Bailey." And he goes, "Well, I'll be. Mary, where did you?" You know, he's just mm-hmm. he's still in.
He's overcome.
Yeah, completely. Completely, and we see Ernie in the background, and I love how he comes forward and just like pushes George, like
yes,
get over there. I mean, we find out later that Ernie is married and he has a kid, so you know he's a little more familiar than George is with how to deal with. A romantic evening, I guess you can say.
Yes. I like this character for, again, all Jimmy Stewart movies. I feel like he needs this guy in all of his films. To, hey, buddy, wake up. We just watched recently Rear Window. This is another example mm-hmm. of an oblivious James Stewart being hit on mercilessly by Grace Kelly, apex Grace Kelly, and he's not into it.
He's just trying to break up with her the entire time. And he's
looking for excuses. So it would be nice to have Ernie show up and push his wheelchair, because he's, you know, recovering at that point, but towards Grace Kelly. I would love to see that.
would have been interesting to see. Yes. Definitely. Yes. Okay. And so like then he moves forward and the two of them you know, look at each other, embrace. And they start to kiss.
And this is a good kiss. I feel like this is a really, I feel passion. Sometimes in these older films, you can tell that there's zero chemistry between the performers. Mm-hmm. But I feel the love here between these
yeah,
two. And definitely. I'm rooting for them. Yeah,
definitely. I think throughout the movie, you see that. You see it more with her. You see that she is more into him than he is into her.
Yes, yes. I would agree. And apparently, I, you know, in my light research I did looking into this, some of their kisses were they edited for content? Because now at this point, the code is in place. So I think
the code is still in place.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, but I think there were some, you know, some surprise performance moments that were maybe not scripted that Capra left in or, you know, incorporated in, especially between the two of them.
Right. I mean, if you want to talk about the code, I mean, this movie was one of the few movies that went against the code because, you know, spoiler to anyone who hasn't watched this movie, Potter gets away with it at the end. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's true. Yes.
And that was a big no-no during the code days. You know, you can't let someone yes. get away. He didn't get away with murder or something, you know, something nefarious, but, you know, he got away with keeping money that belonged to somebody else, because you can't even say he stole.
He technically should have showed up at the end of the movie and given the money back.
That's right.
With, you know, the in front of everyone.
That's right.
Yes, kind of shocked that happens. Didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would have ruined the movie if they did that. But you know, I mean, have either of you seen? I've talked about it. I talked about it a few weeks ago. Have either of you seen the Saturday Night Live skit from the 1980s, which shows like the real ending of It's a Wonderful Life?
No, I don't think so.
Where they all go over to Potter's house and beat him up, basically. You know, they realize that it's him, and they go over there and gotcha. You know.
I love it.
Yeah, they.
I've got some major Potter questions, but I'll save them for the future. But yeah, what an interesting character. Yeah, yes, of course.
Mm. And then basically we hear the serenade outside of Ernie and Bert. Ernie got outside really quickly. You know.
Yes, he did. He booked it out of there.
That's right.
Yeah, and yeah, I feel like he was like, let's leave these kids alone to figure all this out and go serenade them, which it was a nice little it was like a barbershop duet.
That's right. Do either of you, are either of you familiar with the song that they sing?
No.
Mm-mm.
So it's a song called I Love You Truly, which anyone who's been listening to the last 63 episodes of this of this show know that that is my theme music for the season.
Of course, yes.
It was a song written by Cary Jacobs Bond. It was published in 1901, but she actually wrote the song back in 1894, a few years later, and because she was trying to supplement the income of her husband Frank Bond, but then he passed away. And then she moved to Janesville, Wisconsin, where she completed the song. And then she ended up moving to Chicago, where she would rent out rooms and things like that to make things meet. But she in her spare time, she continued writing songs. And then decided that she wants to start, you know, selling her songs. And so she stole this song in 1901. She stole a whole bunch of them together, and this was part of the compilation. And then in 1906,
good for her.
That's right. In 1906, it was sent. It was published as its own, on its own, and it sold over a million copies.
Wow. Okay. That is a million copies, which is platinum. That means a lot nowadays.
That's right. And she was one of the first women
back then.
She's the first woman to ever do that.
Wow. Oh, awesome. That's.
And so she got, I was going to say, did she get proceeds from the sale?
Yes, she did.
She published it. Good.
Yes, she did.
Good for her. Just thinking, you know, like the population was so much smaller at the turn of the century than it is now. You know, it was probably, what, like 90 million people or something, like a million records sold back then. That's
right.
That's massive.
And she was invited three times to the White House to sing the song for presidents. She sung she sung for Teddy Roosevelt, Warren Harding, and Calvin Coolidge.
My goodness.
Wow. Even Silent Cal.
That's right. He's my favorite. He's my favorite song. President. I love Silent Cal.
Okay.
Cool. He was the only president born on July 4th, and I remember as a kid I would go to the library, and they used to print out every year on July 4th. There was, I don't remember in what publication it was, someone would print out Calvin Coolidge quotes, you know, every year on his birthday. Wow. So I would go back and look at the microfiche machines, you know, to see all the different quotes and stuff like that, because he was very witty. You know, my favorite Calvin Coolidge quote was, a woman once came up to him and says, I bet my husband that I can get more than two words out of you. His response, you lose.
I had no idea he was a very quotable president, I guess.
Yes.
But I'll have to look into that. Okay.
Because he was known as Silent Cal because, you know, he didn't say much. But when he said things, they said very important things.
Yeah, I feel like he's a deep cut president. He's somebody that maybe we need more general knowledge on, I think, to filter into society. Yeah. I'd like to know more. Yeah.
Okay. Do any of you know any other movies or TV shows where this song is played?
No.
No, nothing comes to mind.
Okay, so there's a film called I Married a Witch from 1942,
Okay, that's going on my list immediately.
where it was played. Hell's Angels on Wheels in 1967. You have a group of motorcycle gang that starts singing it at the wedding of one of the characters.
Okay,
There's
okay.
a Happy Days episode where Potsy sings the song to Howard and Marion during their vow renewal,
That's very
which
appropriate.
was an
Okay,
episode called
makes
Here Comes
sense.
the Bride Again.
Okay.
There is a movie called The Song, where two of the characters are watching this scene from this movie on TV, and then they have a wedding later that they sing the song of. There are a whole bunch of other sitcoms that have had the song in it. I Love Lucy has an episode which is sung by one of the characters. The episode's called The
Okay.
Marriage License.
Okay.
You have
So
All in the
there you
Family.
go.
That's right. Edith Bunker sings it in an All of the Family episode.
And do we feel like these recurring appearances in film and television, do we think it's because of the initial popularity of the song, or did this movie give it a real bump, do we think?
I would say it's a
Because it's such a
combination of both.
staple and,
I would say it's a
yeah.
combination of both, because think about it. This is a movie that was made 45 years after the song was released, but it's
And I'm
still.
just thinking, like, if this movie was probably one of the original films that would circulate on early television, most likely,
Oh, for sure. You don't know the
right? So
history of
this
this?
is,
This movie didn't have
well,
they let the copyright run out, and that's why it was
yes, and that's why it's been a
that's why it
okay,
was
that
played so
makes a
often
lot
on
of
TV,
sense.
especially around the holiday times.
Yes.
I think it's hard for a modern audience to kind of wrap their heads around how things used to be before recordings were readily available. Like you would see a movie and then never see it again. Whereas now we have access to all media at all
That's
times.
right.
So I'm wondering if like these repeat seasonal viewings kind of entrench a lot of these things, such as this song. I wonder if that
I'm
plays
sure.
into it.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a connection there.
Yeah.
All right, so that's
Great
all.
tune.
Yeah, it really is. That's all I have for this minute. Do either of you have anything else?
No.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay, so Wednesday's segment is a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday, where what I basically do is, as we all know, in the 77 years since this movie came out, they have numerously taken the idea of this movie and use it in many other movies, TV shows, other forms of media, to see like what would happen to a character if they didn't exist, or sometimes sometimes it's with alternate timelines and things like that. But what I decided to do, because you guys are classic movie buffs, I decided I was actually going to discuss today the only remake of this movie. Okay.
1976, I'm
1977.
thinking.
Very close. 1977.
77, okay.
It's known as It Happened One Christmas, which obviously is a play on It Happened
One
It
night.
Happened One Night, and It Happened and It's a Wonderful Life. And the idea of what they did there was is they did a gender swap. Okay, the main character
Okay.
played by Marlo Thomas is named Mary Bailey. And
Okay.
so I found it really interesting the way that they created this remake by gender swapping, where George is a character she's running after, this character named George Hatch, and we get Potter. Potter is played there by Orson Welles.
Oh,
Yeah,
really?
I mean the movie, despite the fact that it is a remake of this movie, it's not that great.
Okay,
It's
yeah.
fun for somebody who knows It's a Wonderful Life really well, like I do. But in general, I wouldn't necessarily say it was the greatest movie, because again, I'm very much against remakes. Why ruin something that's already, if something's been done perfectly, why do you want to try to emulate that again by creating something else?
Right.
George is played by Wayne Rogers, I don't know if either of you are familiar with who that actor is.
No.
So he, I mean, I always remember him from I Dream of Jeannie. In one of the movies, he played, what's his name? He played, you know, her quote unquote master, in one of the movies. Yes. He was also in 73 episodes of MASH. He played, Trapper John.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That was probably the place where most people would know him from. Is there?
Yeah. So then I would know him. Yeah. Right. I grew up watching.
Okay. Man, so of course. Yeah. So basically, the name of the angel who's trying to help Mary is her name is Clara, played by Cloris Leachman, who actually was nominated for an Emmy for her work there as Clara Oddbody. Okay. You get Uncle Billy is renamed here Uncle Willie, played by Barney Martin, who played Jerry Seinfeld's father in the show Seinfeld.
I knew that. I recognized that name. Okay, that makes sense.
Ma Bailey is played by Doris Roberts, the mother from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Okay.
Richard Dysart from L.A. Law plays Peter Bailey.
Okay, interesting.
Christopher Guest plays Harry Bailey. I mean, again, it's a great cast.
Christopher Guest? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, basically the whole idea is that, they focus on Mary as the main character instead of George. And, you know, she's the one who's fighting against Potter, and she's the one who's helping out her father. And she's the one, you know, and George ends up going to war because, you know, they didn't need to have the whole fact that, you know, she got deaf because as a woman during World War II, she wasn't going to be sent to battle anyway and didn't need to, you know, to be 4F or anything like that. Again, right. It's an interesting way to tell the story. It's not as good as It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure. So this one was set in the same time period.
Yes.
Not in the
70s, it was set in the same time period. Okay. It was still set. Okay. Yeah. They still did it that way.
And Orson, I mean, this is, you know, later Orson is a special type of Orson, but how is he faring here? Is he in good shape?
He's not in good shape at all.
Lucid? Is
No. Not at all. Not at all. But again, he's no Lionel Barrymore. That's what it comes down to.
Yes, that's true.
You know, I love the way, I mean, some of the lines in the movie are exactly the same and some of them are very different. And, you know, just listening to some of the dialogue from other people is just, you know, and like, for instance, an example is exactly from this scene. Okay. Where, you know, they're in the house and, you know, after they're, you know, after the wedding or after the whole thing with the building and loan, you know, they get to the house that, you know, Mary is brought to the house by George, you know, and they look around and she starts laughing and he goes, "What are you laughing at?" And she says, "Maybe we shouldn't have broken all those windows, you know, because there's all the rain coming in on them."
That's pretty good. That's a nice punch up. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that worked. Okay, so do you guys want to tell people where they can find you guys?
Sure. Our show is called Old Movie Time Machine, and we're talking mostly about movies made between 1945 and 1965. You can find us in all the usual podcasting places, in your grocer's freezer, YouTube, and also follow us on Instagram at Time Machine Podcast. Thank you. All right,
and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, hot dog!
Hot dog!
Hot dog!
You truly, truly did. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.